says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Okay, that's fairly straightforward, isn't it? Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. If you honor God, you'll obey your parents. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in training and instruction of the Lord. Or as the Message puts it, fathers, don't exasperate your children by coming down hard on them. Take them by the hand and lead them in the way of the Master. So what do you think it means? There's a bit more chance to respond. What do you think it means to honour your mum and dad? Is it just about obedience? Anybody else got any ideas? Not to bring shame on them. That's a very important point. In other words, they've looked after you, they've cared for you, their name is at stake when you misbehave. That's true, isn't it? Anybody, anything else? Care for them, look after them, yes. You see, one of these things is, when you're small, your parents care for you, don't they? They feed you, they clothe you, they provide for you. When you get older, it goes the other way around, doesn't it? And your children start caring for you and start looking after you. Have you seen that notice on the back of the car? Spending my kids' inheritance or something like that, you know? But really, and I said to my kids, what are you going to do when Dad gets old and decrepit? And they said, are you going to have him in your house to look after him? And they said, no, we'll put you in a home. So they've obviously understood this completely correctly. But seriously, it means something. It's important to honour your father and your mother. And I think this commandment really is about a two-way street, because it's about children obviously having respect for their parents. It's not working. Oh, right, okay, good. We're out of date, aren't we? Right, okay, we'll get there. It doesn't matter that much. First thing to remember about all this is God is described in the Bible as a father. In fact, in several places of the Bible, God is actually described as a mother. He has a care for his mother. Can you remember something that Jesus said that is a motherly talk, really? When he talked about a hen gathering their chicks under their wings, well, that's not a fatherly role, is it? That's more of a motherly role. I wonder what it was like in your home. Often it's dad that's the disciplined one, isn't it? Sometimes mum says, I know some mums, because when I've been there with their kids, they'll suddenly say, you wait till your dad gets home. I'm not sure that's actually a very good thing to say, but that's the sort of threat that some give. I wonder how many of you mothers have done that. Wait till your dad gets home. And I've certainly heard that a few times. But sometimes it's the father that's the kind of regarded as the disciplinarian one. Sometimes fathers can be quite remote from their children. Sometimes fathers can be, I used to find sometimes when I was studying and working from home, one of the kids would come and knock on the door and you open the study door and they come in, can we spend some time with you, Dad? Well, I've got some work to do, we'll organise to do something with you later on. But what sort of father is God? Well, I believe the Bible paints him as a father as caring and compassionate, tender, forgiving, yet he disciplines when we need to. I remember another pastor said to me once that a little girl had said to him once, I don't think my daddy loves me. And he said, why don't you think your daddy loves me? He never tells me off. He never smacks me. He never does anything. There was no discipline. She recognized that discipline and putting them right is part of being loved. You know, sometimes we used to do parenting courses up in Frodsham. And one of the things about that that I really loved was there was a part in that where we taught the parents about choices. And sometimes you say to your child, in this particular instance, you've got two choices. And it might be one that they want to do, there might be two choices they don't want to do because they say, I want to do a certain thing. And you say, that isn't one of the choices you've got. You've got to either go to bed now or you can have 10 minutes extra. I don't want to go to bed at all. Whatever the choices are, you say, you've got choices to make. And I remember one of the parents came back one week and he said his little boy, who was 4 or 5, had come down the stairs all upset because they'd had a difficult day and he hadn't done what daddy had said. And he knew there were choices, and he didn't like either of the choices he was presented with. And he suddenly came down to daddy to cry, to say how he was very sorry for the naughtiness he'd shown that day. And he said, I don't like choices. You can understand, because there were two choices, and he wanted a third choice. And that's what discipline is all about sometimes. That's what fathering is all about sometimes, is offering the choices. So, God is our father. Now, the sad thing is, and the difficult thing is, for some people, your memory of father or mother is not a good one. I had a lovely mother and I had a lovely father. I had a lot of arguments with my mother. Full and frank exchange of views, I think we used to call them. Lots of arguments with mum and dad. And even as a teenager, it's par for the course, isn't it? I mean, Trevor, you should know, you've had so many sons. You must have had the odd disagreement. Well, you've obviously done a really good job of fathering them. That's really good. But seriously, you do have arguments sometimes with your parents, don't you? But you know, sometimes, or just an aside here, sometimes our experience of fatherhood has a relationship on how we see God, because God is our Father. In the film, I don't know how right this is from the book, but in the film that we saw, The Case for Christ with Lee Strobel, one of the things that one of the psychiatrists that he went to see was pointing out, or psychologist he went to see, she pointed out the number of the atheists that he worshipped and looked to had problems with their fathers, and fathers who were very difficult and remote. And she really was suggesting, although she wasn't a Christian, she was suggesting to him that the remoteness of their fathers had meant they couldn't relate to God. That was quite a challenge. And he was obviously really touched by that, because he had a real difficult relationship with his dad, and he realized perhaps that was affecting his thoughts of God. So it's a very interesting thought. So if you've ever had that situation, if you had a challenging childhood with a challenging father, it might be worth thinking sometimes of praying with someone and re-understanding what God is like. That maybe he's, you know, there were some things about my dad that were brilliant. There were some things I remember about my dad that were not so good. I remember when I argued with my sister, which happened from time to time. Well, okay, every day. And my dad used to manage to climb our stairs in our house at least 3 at a time, and you could hear him coming. Blump, 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 up the stairs. What's going on in here? And normally it was me who got the, got the blame, I think. I don't know whether that was really me who got the blame all the time or whether I just felt like that, but it felt like that sometimes. But in other ways, my dad was great. You know, we had a great relationship in lots of ways, and I didn't really appreciate that until I was much, much older. So perhaps that's why God reminds us to honour our parents, because sometimes when we're young, we don't. We don't recognise how good they are, and it's not until we get older. Do you know the other thing about when you get to be a father yourself or a mother yourself, do you ever find yourself saying something and doing something with your children and you think, oh no, I'm just talking like my dad. I've just become him, or I've become my mother. I often become my mother, which is the wrong way round, but there we are. But seriously, God calls us to honour and respect our parents. He calls us to show gratitude for the sacrifices they make. A lot of parents will make sacrifices to give us what we want. When I was a schoolboy, I went to St Dunstan's College in Catford, and the only place you could buy the uniform was Harrods. And I'm sure they had to make some sacrifices to go all the way to Harrods, or the school shop where they could buy it as well, which came from Harrods, to pay out for my uniform. And I know there were sacrifices that had to be made to pay for that smart uniform when I got the scholarship to that school. The other thing is, look, Ten Commandments. You can move on to the next one then. Respect for our parents. There he is. I don't know whose mum and who that is, but seriously, God calls us to respect and honour our parents, to show gratitude for the sacrifices they make, and to obey them. And sometimes maybe that means doing the things that, as we get older, we may question them a bit more. But seriously, as young children, to obey, which means as parents, if our children are going to obey, that sets a high standard for us, doesn't it? You have to be doing the right thing. You have to, when you've got young children, make it worth obeying. Make obeying be the right thing to do. So it's a two-way street to this. If our children are going to be called to obey us and respect us, we need to treat them in a way that's worthy of respect. So as children, our parents provide, guide, and protect us. As adults, we do the same for parents, as we said earlier. Now, sometimes, you know, when there are challenges within the church fellowship of people who don't have parents, maybe lost parents when they were younger, or whose parents aren't so supportive, we as a local church sometimes have to step in and be almost pseudo-parents and pseudo-children to people who need help and support. So that's part of the role of church too. So I think all this is rolled in when there's not only honour and respect for parents by their children, but I think, you know, in the church you need, and I'm not just saying this because I am getting that way, we need to respect our older people, don't we? There was a notice up in one of the churches, a lot of the notices in our churches I've been in, for about elder abuse. And that doesn't mean elders of the church, it means the older people. And seriously, we should have respect for our elders, for the older ones amongst us like Bob, you know, the ones who are getting on in years, deserve our respect as well. And that's all rolled into this, I do believe it is. So it's important as children that we do obey our parents, we do listen to our parents, that's correct, that honours God. But also as parents, therefore, we need to have been examples to our children so that when they obey us, it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Does that make sense? We need to be examples. And we need to all be acting in a way that honours God's name. And that applies to parenting too. And you know, I believe the church needs to offer support to parents. One of the young men who lived next door to us many years ago when we were up in Cheshire brought his brand new baby out the back gate one day, holding him in his arms, and he looked at me and he said, he didn't come with a manual, so I don't know what to do next. I don't know how to treat this. And I said, well, go and see my wife. She's had five. She knows more than me. But seriously, they don't come with a manual, do they? And very often, you know, the church can step in and support parents in the difficult role of parenting. Some of the families I know who have 2 and 3 children, it's quite a struggle. Is it, Tim? Is it hard work? Do you need a bit of help? Does Laurie need a bit of help? Both of you, that's good. So we need to support. If families in our church are going to keep this commandment and rule, we need to help them and support them. So it's an all-round thing. So you might think, oh, my children are grown up. I don't need to worry too much about that anymore. I expect all the respect from them. But maybe we need to be supporting within the church those who might have families problems. There is, of course, a verse in the Bible that talks about smacking, or does it? Discipline. There's a verse that says, it says in the Message, this in Proverbs 13, verse 24, it says, a refusal to correct is a refusal to love. Love your children by disciplining them. And in the older versions, it says, he who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. Does that mean that smacking, and when I was a little boy, when I was under 11, my mother used to keep above the doorways, a little whippy sticks. And if I was really naughty, I got a whack across the hand or a whack across the legs, because she believed in that kind of punishment. Nowadays, that's getting to the point in some places where that may even be made illegal, they're talking about. But is that, a lot of people have quoted that to me and said, oh, it says spare the rod and spoil the child. It means you should smack your... It doesn't actually mean that, I understand. What that verse is talking about is about a shepherd's rod or a shepherd's crook, which a shepherd would lose not to hit his sheep with, sometimes to give them a gentle nudge, I suppose, but actually to guide them and direct them. So it's really talking about guiding and directing our children in the right way. So that's important to remember, that we're called to guide and direct our children in the right way. Now, what about the promise at the end of that? It says at the end of that commandment, there's a promise that you'll live long in the land if you honour your father and mother. That's important, isn't it? Why is that promise connected with that verse, do you think? I wonder if you've ever thought about why there's... It says, doesn't it, in the New Testament, that it's the only commandment with a promise attached directly. I wonder if it's something to do with when family life works well, then society runs harmoniously and life will be good. It's when family life breaks down, all sorts of things go wrong. And I see that day after day when I go into the police station and I see the reports of criminals and I meet families who are broken up. So we need to pray for family life in this country. We really do, because that's one of the things that's so important. When family life breaks down, society begins to break down too. So perhaps that's what God meant when he made that promise. Think about that, what it means. Perhaps it means that when families really work well together, when children honour their parents and parents are good examples to their children, then society runs more Then society as a whole runs more harmoniously. Move on. We're on to the next one now. The next one is no murder. It very simply says in the Message version of the Bible, no murder. Or in, I think, the version that Eunice just read to us, thou shalt not murder. In the older version, it said, thou shalt not kill. I wonder if there's a difference between killing and murder. I think probably the commandment certainly does mean not to murder. But because when you come into the Old Testament, there's a lot of killing in the Old Testament, isn't there? Does that ever challenge you? When you read the Old Testament, there's an awful lot of killing. And sometimes God even commands the people of Israel to go into a city and to kill everybody that's there. That's hard, isn't it, in view of this commandment? Perhaps in your groups you might talk about how that works out. But, you know, it's quite clear from the Bible that at times God uses his people in the Old Testament to get rid of or to end the lives of those who are bringing wickedness into the world, to judge the wicked. God says to him, they must be destroyed. That's pretty hard thinking. Does that count as murder? Well, clearly it can't. But that's a challenge, isn't it? I always find that a challenge, the violence and everything in the Old Testament. So you might think about that in your groups. But there was another thing that happened in the Old Testament as well, which is the picture in the corner. For people who accidentally killed somebody, got into a fight and somebody was killed, they were able to flee to a number of cities in the area that were known as cities of refuge. and they could go there and they could be kept safe there until they could have a fair trial, so that it would be tried fairly. And that's only fair, isn't it, a system of justice? There's been a number of stories in the press recently, haven't there, of people whose houses have been attacked and raided, and accidentally, I feel very sorry, don't you, for the poor old man that was found an intruder about to attack him in his kitchen, and he struck back and the man died? It was a horrible situation for him, but he wasn't charged with that because he was defending himself and his home, and he was really defending his life. So that was a pretty big challenge. And in the Old Testament, if that happened to somebody, they could run to one of these cities of refuge and be sure of a fair trial. So justice was also important when these things happened and when things went wrong. And I think it's still vitally important. But you know, Jesus actually said a bit more about murder. Look at, and then there's the next, can we move on to the next one? Oh, I thought there was another one in between. Go back. Oh, well, I put it in the corner there, haven't I? Matthew 5:21, that's what I've done, yes. Jesus amplified this command with these words. You have heard that it was said to people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. And again, anyone who says to his brother, raka, which was a term of some sort of contempt or swearing of some kind, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of hellfire. This is pretty tough stuff, isn't it? Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and remembering your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. So Jesus is saying it's not just about murder. Actually, he says it expands into murderous thoughts. Have you ever felt like that about somebody? I have to tell you a little story. I met somebody the other day, somebody I know that you won't know, who I met almost by accident, although God was obviously in this. I met this lady and she said to me, I'm going to go and kill someone. I don't think she actually meant she was actually going to kill him, but she was going to cause him great harm. And we stopped and we had a long chat and a long conversation. In the end, she didn't go and find that person. She went home and later on texted me and said she was feeling better. And I felt that was a God moment, because all the anger had built up in her mind against this guy. And okay, he'd probably done things wrong to her, but she was really feeling that she wanted to go and really hurt him, even to kill him. She was so furious and so angry. And she was, if you'd have seen me on Thursday standing outside the dry cleaners just down the road with a lady swinging her arms and shouting and swearing at me, it wasn't at me, it was about somebody else. But seriously, we managed to calm her down in the end, and she went home. But you could see, couldn't you, that anger and bitterness beginning to build up and build up and build up leads on to something bad, leads on to something damaging. And Jesus said really that those thoughts of murder are also to be avoided, those thoughts of bitterness. So when something goes wrong, when someone hurts us, so you see how deep this commandment goes? Right into our thought life. When someone hurts us or harms us, don't allow that bitterness to build up within you. Romans 12 has something to say about it. Do not repay anyone with evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. We can't, can we, all the time? Sometimes people can be unpleasant to us and it's almost impossible to live at peace. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, and I love these verses, this is really great. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. That's an interesting, I couldn't find any pictures of that to put up, but it's interesting, isn't it? That by being kind to your enemy, the one who hates you, you actually make him look silly, really. That's the point. And you really, you know, go against it. So in other words, that when somebody is angry towards us and bitter towards us, I've had experiences like that on the telephone in the funeral business. I had a guy once ring me up whose name, strangely enough, was Mr. Body, but there we are, that's the point. And he rang me up and he said, I'm so angry with you about what's going on. He said, I'm going to come around there, and well, he used a few other words that I won't include. I'm going to come down there and kill you and cause you harm. So I said, okay, I don't think I'm going to talk to you any further. That would be wise. But I was gentle, I was calm, and I put the phone down politely and gently, not bang. And he never did come down. And as you see, he didn't kill me because I'm still here. But he threatened. And the only answer was the answer that says in the Bible, a soft answer turns away wrath. And you know, when somebody is harmful to us and wants to harm us, do you know, when we get anger and bitter at that person, who does it hurt? It hurts me. And it builds up inside me. And I've watched that happen to a number of people that have let that bitterness grow and let that bitterness develop. So when we think about do not murder, there's more to it than that. And of course, clearly we go further because we've got to ask questions about the next one. And I'm not going to try and deal with this in detail, but If the Bible says thou shalt not murder, what about war? What happens? What would happen if today there was a world war and some of us, well, I wouldn't be, obviously I'm too old, but some of you younger guys were called up to serve in the army. I wonder how you deal with that. I'm not really sure how I would deal with that. It would be a challenge. And I know I've talked to my, not to my dad so much about it, but my uncle, that's right, I was talking to my uncle just before he died about this very thing. And in their family, the brothers decided that they would not serve in the army. But all of them actually served somewhere else. My uncle was telling at the funeral how he served as a Bevan boy down the mines. So he did his part. I knew another man who served in the bomb disposal unit as a conscientious objector. He was able to do something powerful in that war. And I remember they turned up once at something somewhere where there was an unexploded bomb. And he said, we turned up as a team. And people were saying, oh, look at you, you know, because they wore a uniform that showed they were objectors and weren't serving soldiers. And people were being nasty to them until this group of men went down to the bomb and began to work on the bomb. And suddenly they saw that these guys were not cowards, they were brave. And they were prepared to do something and they earned their respect. So that would be a difficult choice. And I think, I don't know about you, but I think I hate wars. And I hate to see the killing on the televisions and things like that. But if we were in that situation, we'd have to think carefully about facing our conscience, how we'd react to it. There's also the question, I suppose, about the death penalty, how you feel about that as well. We haven't got the death penalty for murder in our country anymore. We have in some places in the United States. And there seems to be some suggestion that as individuals, we don't have the right to make that decision. But that's another thing to think about and consider. And I'm not going to present you with an opinion this morning. There you are. You thought I was going to give you an answer, didn't you, to a difficult question. But I'm going to leave you to think about that and how that command affects that. But the key thing I wanted to share with you this morning, one of the most important things coming out of this, that when we think about not murdering, really we need to remember that where it all begins. It begins in the heart and in the mind. And we need to be able to deal with that situation. And we need to remember in mind those verses we've just read from Romans. Do not repay evil with evil. Learn to forgive. I remember, I've probably said it before, but I remember the police officer whose son was stabbed by, a terrorist or a drug addict in Manchester some time ago. And his dad was chief constable on the Isle of Man. And he was asked by press reporters, What do you feel about the guys that have killed your son? And he said, I forgive them, of course. And that became news all over the country. And I've heard that guy speak and talk about it, about how he was able to forgive. Somehow, in God's power, he was able to forgive and instead not allow the bitterness and anger to well up inside him. He was still terribly sad when I heard him speak at a meeting. He cried even years after the event. Tears rolled down his cheeks as he remembered his son. But his bitterness and hatred had gone. The bitterness and hatred he realised only hurt him. So that's a big challenge, isn't it? There's a challenge here to mums and dads. There's a challenge to us as children, whether we're children or parents, to honour our parents and to be examples to our children, whatever age they are. Even if our children like mine are grown up, they still occasionally come for a bit of advice. They probably don't take it. And sometimes as a church, we can be parents to those who don't have parents. There's so many challenges in that command there. And then, of course, thou shalt not murder. Well, it begins in the heart. So we need to deal with those bitter thoughts as well and those angry thoughts as well and keep them down. Let's move on to the last one, hopefully. What does it mean to honour? That's not my mum and dad. I don't know who that was, just some random mother and father. Think seriously about what it means to honour your mother and father. Think what it means to us as parents, to us as children, whatever age we are. Think about also what it means about relationships in the church. I think also to honour the older people amongst us, where they need help and support. And the last one, I like this one. When you forgive, you do not erase the memory. So when you forgive someone, you don't forget what happened. You simply choose to forgive to free yourself from the bitterness. That's so important. When it comes to having angry thoughts, maybe justified against somebody, to let that bitterness go is so, so important. I hope that's sort of widened out the sort of commands a bit more and made us think about what they really mean. And in your groups during the week, you'll have a chance to take that a bit further or consider it further. Or if you want to discuss it further with other people, then do so. Because these commands have a lot more import than just that first cursory reading. They mean so much. And Jesus made that very clear, didn't he? When he amplified them in the New Testament and when he spoke. And I'm sorry my voice seems to be fading away very slowly. So a couple of weeks' time it should be gone completely. Maybe I'm just coming out with sympathy with you, Alex. Okay, let's sing another song before we have communion. Father of the Fathers. And I think that's really something we're called to in this day and age, is so many people have bad relationships with mum and with dad. Sometimes as a church, we're called to be fathers and mothers. to those who don't have God-loving fathers and mothers. Father of the fatherless. We'll get there. Okay.